Welcome to True Stories of Tinseltown, and I have a really good guest for you today. It is author, ex-publicist, Renaissance man, I think, Michael Druxman. How are you, Michael?
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for calling in. I really, really appreciate you coming on the show. I really do.
Well, I enjoy doing shows like this.
Yeah, they're fun. They're easy. They're light. You know, no one's, you know, asking for your shoe size or, you know, anything really below what you want to do. So I found you via, I don't know, I think a classic movie page or something. And you had Ida Lupino, Michael Druxman, and a circle, Ida Lupino. So I loved Ida Lupino. And I got in touch with you and you kindly said you'd come on. And so is this the most recent play you've published?
This is I have 17 plays in a collection I call the Hollywood Legends, and this is the most recent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the 10th one-person show. The other seven are multiple character shows, but this is the 10th one-person show.
And they all sound fascinating. But you knew Ida?
I met Ida when I was about 14 years old. My hometown is Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard Duff, Ida's husband at the time, was he was from Bremerton, Washington, which is right outside of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, we're talking the mid-50s now.
Yeah.
My mother was the president of the Seattle chapter of City of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And for their annual banquet, award banquet, Ida and her husband Howard came up from Los Angeles and appeared at the banquet. And my mother was nice enough to take me out of school for a couple of days so I could, you know, they did all this publicity.
Good for her. Go, Mom,
go. And I got to go around with them. And then about a year or so later, my father, during spring break, took mm-hmm. me down to Los Angeles. And Howard and I they were doing the Mr. Adams and Eve show at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And not only did they have us over to their house for lunch, but they invited us to the studio to see, you know, watch them film, which was really great because where they shot was the old Selznick studio,
mm-hmm.
Where they shot Gone with the Wind. And
wow.
Somebody gave us a tour and we got to see, you know, some of the old sets on the back lot. They don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
From Gone with the Wind, you know, some of the, you know, Tara was still standing and 12 Oaks. And, you know, it's, you know, for a guy who wanted all his life to go into the entertainment business, it was a big thrill.
It would have been a big thrill for me, too. I mean, my gosh. Yeah. And they were just kind and down to earth.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. And then several years later, when I moved to Los Angeles, I was in contact with them. And, you know, I spoke to them regularly. I interviewed them for some of my books.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really was off and on contact with them for the rest of their lives.
They had a long marriage. I know she had a small one in the middle, Collier Young. But did they stay married until one of them died?
No. Ida was first married to Louis Hayward.
Yes.
And then she was married to Collier Young relatively briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And then she married Howard. And they were married, I don't know how many years, many, many years, but it was a very stormy marriage. It was they were known as the Battling Duffs. and you know, they were off and on. And actually, I didn't know they had split up. I you know, I was a publicist for many years in Hollywood before I became a screenwriter and a playwright.
35 years, right? 35?
Let's see, from the about 68 until the early 90s.
Cool.
I was a publicist. And, you know, but, you know, I started writing my books and my stage and screenplays, you know, prior to this.
You have like 46 things on Amazon because I, you know, I'm on your author's page and following you, and I'm really, really impressed because you wrote an autobiography of Paul Muni. You wrote
a biography.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I knew that. I'm sorry. And one on Basil Rathbone, right?
Yeah, which is actually my second best-selling book of all time. The best-selling is my book I probably care the least about, you know, artistically as a writer. But my best-selling book is my Dinah Shore book.
Oh, that's right. She comes up first.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Dinah was quite a dame.
Yeah. And see, I had just written a book prior to that about on Merv Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And Merv was wonderful. I mean, he... You know, he gave me many interviews. He was very friendly. He loved the book, and he even put me on his show.
Wow.
In fact, I'm sitting here in my office right now, and on my wall is a picture of me being interviewed by Merv on the show. And then I figured, well, the next logical one, the publisher wanted me to do Dinah Shore. And she would not cooperate. I found some people, you know, who had worked with her who gave me interviews. But, you know, and I went to New York to do interview people, and I went to Tennessee to interview people, but I couldn't get a bit of help for her. And then there was a legal issue with the book, not having anything to do with Dinah, and so the book, you know, got put aside for about a year or so, and then by the time the legal issue had been cleared up, another book on Dinah Shore had come out. So I said, you know, it really, I'd been paid a lot of money, and I said, okay, to heck with it, you know.
Let me finish it.
So about 3 years ago, I came across the book in a box in my closet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I looked at it and I talked to my publisher. I said, you know, and it was typed before I had a computer. So there was a lot of chicken. It was done on a typewriter. There was a lot of chicken scratches on it.
Yeah.
You know. And so I said to my publisher, I said, you know, when I get around to feel like retyping the thing, I'll send it in to you. And he said, no, I'll pay for the retyping. Don't worry about it. And it's been out for 2 years now, and I got a royalty check about a year ago. It was the highest royalty check that the publisher has ever, you know, I mean, she is so popular, and it continues to sell.
Congrats. No, I always, she was an interesting character. Wasn't there even a rumor that she was mixed race?
Yeah, it was false.
She was
a nice Jewish girl from Tennessee. And the way that thing got started is Kate Smith was known as a Southern songbird.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that Dinah was becoming popular. And Kate Smith is the one who spread that one.
That's nasty.
Rumor.
That's very nasty thing to do. Anything wrong with it, but in those days, it would be hugely scandalous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In the 1940s. And not TV. And all you heard was her voice on radio at the time. And that's how that happened.
Shame on Miss God Bless America. Shame on her, Miss Goody Two-Shoes.
You hear about Kate, you don't hear much about Kate Smith anymore.
No. I didn't. I just know her as a, you know, before she died, as some, you know, big lady who caterwauled God Bless America and everybody. I don't know. She had some big moniker about being, you know, Miss USA. But,
oh, I know.
Okay, so I want to go back to what Ida's a one-woman play. What does that part, what did you write apart? What part of her life?
Well, it takes place late in her life,
mm-hmm.
Probably in the early 80s, when she basically had become a loner. The name of the play, by the way, is Ida, the Last Lupino, and it's available in both paperback and Kindle editions through Amazon. And she's basically a a recluse. She's a recluse living in this her home in Brentwood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, home is falling apart. The plumbing is out.
Oh, no. Poor Ida.
And she's, yeah, she's living by herself. She's basically forgotten. She's got a couple of friends who call her, check on her. And, you know, it's her journey into light, shall we say.
Her journey into what? I'm sorry, didn't
light, into light, from the darkness into light. Because she's been, Howard Duff has dumped her.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, I started to tell you, I ran into, I was doing an interview with one of my clients at Musso Frank in Hollywood, on Hollywood Boulevard. And I got there a few minutes early, and I ran Howard Duff. I hadn't seen him in years, and Howard Duff was there sitting with a very attractive young lady. And I went over and, you know, we chatted, and he introduced her as his wife.
Wow.
And I, at that point, had no idea that he and Ida had split.
So he left her for a young Tootsie.
Well, they were not getting along for a long time. And, you know, there was a lot of fighting. And, you know, I remember calling Ida after that. And she was really down in the dumps, you know. I mean, she said, I thought I was going to be married for the rest of my life. And
fooled you. It's just, it just happens. You know, you have to just kind of roll with it. But, I believe that Ida was a big drinker, and probably Howard Duff was as well. And
Howard was the big drinker, and Ida, you know, decided, all right, I'll give you one for one.
Yeah, and she became a big drinker.
She became a big drinker, too. And the last 10 years or so of her life, she had a conservator.
Really?
Helping her with her
financial affairs and all that stuff.
Financial affairs, yeah, because she had problems. She had problems.
What year did she die?
You know, off. Wait a minute. Let me pull out my script.
Okay.
let me see. She died in. You asked me all these hard questions.
What a beast! I'm a beast.
Yeah. Let me see. She died in 1995.
Wow.
She was 77 years old.
Wow. You know what's ironic is before I contacted you, I just saw a movie that she did, because you can get some really great cheesy movies on YouTube. And it was one that was, and they suggested it for me, and it was one called The Letters.
And The Letter?
The Letters. It had three letters that were being sent, and there was an air crash, and the people did not receive them for a year. They got those three letters out to these women, and Ida. I don't know. She was Ida, but she did good. I also loved her in Columbo when she was with Johnny Cash. Did you ever see that one?
My wife mentioned that to me the other day. I hadn't seen it, but
it's great. I don't know if they still have them on Netflix.
Yes, I don't know on Netflix, but it was on whatever that channel is that runs the old TV shows. One of those, and she mentioned that she gets killed in the first 20 minutes. Right? She's the victim.
Ida in The Letters? No.
No, the Johnny Cash one, the Columbo.
Oh, yes, because he was way younger than her.
I'm not familiar with The Letter.
You can find it on YouTube.
Was that a TV movie?
Yeah, it was like a 70s movie of the week. You know how ABC used to do that. And they have all these great movies. I love them. They're so cheesy, but good.
The Letter.
Because
The Letter, of course, is the famous Betty Davis film.
And it was also done with Gene Ingalls, right? The first time, Ingalls.
Yes, you're right.
I liked Betty much better in the part, but I did end up seeing it. I also got to see that on YouTube. So you check it out. There's some great stuff.
I will. I was not familiar with that.
I talked to Jessica Raines, Claude Raines' daughter.
I know Jessica.
I love her. She is so sweet. She really is. And it was so kind of her to come on. And she did. And she, you know, I looked at her IMDb because I saw that she was, I read the book and I saw that she went into acting. And there's this other movie, Scream Pretty Peggy. And she, Bette Davis is in the movie and Jessica is like in the first 5 minutes. And I'm like, I just watched that movie last week. And I sent her a screenshot and I said, look it up. You're there. She blinked. She rolled her eyes. I said, Emmy winning rolling eyes. She's a lovely lady. Okay.
Yes,
so Ina was really cool to me because she was the first woman to direct a film noir. Her movies were really good. You know, they weren't like, big.
Well, the Hitchhiker was a classic.
I love that movie. I love it. And then The Bigamist and Outrage About Rape, which is huge. I don't think that they had ever really done anything quite so open about it. Maybe alluded, but never did it. And she just, you know, I like her. And she was the only woman on Twilight Zone to direct Twilight Zone and to act on Twilight Zone.
That's true.
And she directed one of my favorite episodes, The Mask. It is amazing.
Right.
The Mardi Gras.
I have on DVD, I have the entire, all the Twilight Zone.
What a great movie. And then she played Barbara Jean, sort of a Norma Desmond type. And really cool. Loved her in that. Okay. So why don't we talk about, you have one like with Lon Chaney and other people like that, the monsters.
I have that one is called The Last Monsters. And it's a 5-person play and 3 of the characters are Lon Chaney Jr., John Carradine and Bela Lugosi, and it takes place on the during the filming of a movie called The Black Sleep, which was made in the, I believe, 1956, and that was really the last of the old time horror movies. About 2 or 3 years later, Roger Corman started making his Vincent Price.
Right, the Edgar Allan
Poe. Hammer in England started making their movies with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, the Draculas and Frankensteins. So this was really the last of the old school. And it takes place on the set, and there's a lot of conflict between the three characters.
So you base it, what did you base it on, like, at the end of the rope, like the last movie they did?
And well, it was, I mean, Lugosi died a week or two, a couple of weeks after the movie was finished.
Huh.
Carradine seemed to work the rest of his life. Chaney had a major drinking problem.
You could tell, boy.
Yeah.
You could tell his... His face was ravaged by booze. He aged quickly.
I know. But Carradine, you know, I know Carradine drank, but it didn't seem to affect his work.
That's great.
You know, I knew John Carradine. I worked on and off with John Carradine for many years. I first met him when I was in Seattle. He used to come up to this theater called the Cirque Playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him do The Winslow Boy and Shadow and Substance. And then when I went to Hollywood a few years later, I made a short film. I was, you know, wanted to be a big time producer. I made a short film that didn't go anyplace, but he narrated it. We paid him to narrate it.
He had a great voice, a really great voice.
The problem on these plays I've written, the multiple character plays are difficult because not only do you have to, it's a one-person play, all you need is somebody who can play Ida Lupino.
Right.
Or Carol Lombard, which is one of my more popular plays.
Yeah, I saw that.
But with The Last Monsters, aside from the two incidental characters, you need somebody who's believable as Lon Chaney Jr., as Bela Lugosi, and John Carradine. So you're looking for, you know...
casting thing. You know what? I am sort of almost obsessed with after I read John's book on Barbara Payton. And you did a three. And I, when I read that book, I said, this has got to be a movie. This, and especially with the Francho, Tom Neal, and
Franchantone.
Right. That huge triangle. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you. I remember when I was a kid, I think it was 1951 that the incident happened. I remember my folks had brought me to Los Angeles, and I remember seeing the headlines in Los Angeles. I was probably 10 years old when that happened, when that big brawl happened.
He literally rearranged Francho's face.
Yeah. And I remember that. And when I moved to Hollywood as an adult, the second apartment place I lived in, I remember while I was living in the first place, I read in the paper that Tom Neal had been arrested for murdering his wife.
Isn't that amazing? Shot in the head.
A few months later, I moved in this other place, and one of my neighbors was Barbara Payton.
Wow. What a sad story. Did she befriend you?
No. I was very young then. I was probably about 22, 23, and I knew her background. And frankly, I was very intimidated. I see her by the pool. She had a pool apartment. It was on Normandy in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a north of Wilshire Boulevard. And I only stayed there for about 3 months because the place was a little too wild for my taste.
Well, she was so wild. I don't think anyone...
Yeah, there was always guys in her unit.
Yeah. And she was one of... I think she might have had the worst demise of anyone in Hollywood, you know, where you go and have so much potential. You're this gorgeous woman, and then you throw it away, and then you end up at Skid Row, and she had this long thing.
By the way, the name of the play is B-Movie. and it is also available in paperback and Kindle through Amazon.
How long is that play? How long? How many pages?
It's a full-length play. It's a full-length play.
I bet that would be great. I'd love to see that.
I'm trying to get recently, I've got seven of my one-person plays are available in audio. In fact, we just did five of them end of last year.
Cool.
I was doing five at the same they're available in audio. And this is a play, B-Movie, is one that I'd love, if I could find the right situation, I'd love to put that on audio, too. It's
that's an amazing story. It really, it's like, you know, manipulator, then him. Oh, my God. Did you see? He got, what did he get? Involuntary manslaughter?
It was a manslaughter thing. I think he served, I'm not sure on this, but I think he served about 8 years, and he died within 6 months after they came out.
If you saw the picture of him after he came out, you hardly recognized that it would be him. He wasn't that old, right?
No, but he, you know something? He was really a nasty guy.
He sounds like a real creep. Yeah.
I remember when I was researching this play, I went up to the apartment building where the fight took place, and I interviewed a guy who actually witnessed it.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, I went into the unit was empty at the time, and I went into the unit, her unit there,
uh-huh.
And they said, you know, in her bedroom, there was a big mirror on the ceiling.
On the ceiling? I believe it. I believe it. How funny is that? Yeah. And Francho, Mr. Classy, but he had his little secrets. Let's put it that way. That didn't.
Well, he was the lucky one. He was the only one who survived.
I know.
That incident.
It's horrible.
He went back to New York, and he continued to work. I mean, for the rest of his life.
I really liked him as an actor. I thought he was a really good actor, especially his 30 stuff. Okay, so I want to know, why do you do so many one acts? What made you decide to do one?
One actor, one character.
One actor, yeah.
Okay, well, that started back in the, back in the late 70s, there was Henry Fonda was doing Clarence Darrow, Julie Harris was doing, the Belle of Amherst.
Emily Dickinson?
Dickinson.
Uh-huh.
James Whitmer was doing Will Rogers and Harry Truman. And I was fascinated by the concept of the one person play, the monologue idea. And I said, you know, with the exception of Will Rogers, who was really much more than just an actor, nobody had done at that point a movie star. And I said, well, who should I do? And, I came up with Clark Gable. And I wrote the play, and this theater wanted to do it. And we found an actor who even looked like Gable. And it was a very, very successful. I had people from Hollywood, coming out. Yeah, this is, I don't know if you know California, but we did it in Agoura, which is way out in the valley,
mm-hmm.
not even beyond the San Fernando Valley. And people from Hollywood were coming out to this little 55-seat theater and seeing the play. And then they moved it, closer into town a few months later. And so after Gable, I did Spencer Tracy. I did Carol Lombard. And then one of my former publicity clients was Jack Carter, the comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out and saw it, and he said, I want you to write me a one-person play on Al Jolson. Well, I loved Al Jolson. I loved this stuff. And he paid me, and we had a falling out. And the play, he paid me off, and the rights to the play reverted back to me.
Right.
And so it took me about a year and a half, but I was able to clear all the song rights. And there were about 16 songs, famous mm-hmm. Jolson songs in it. I was able to clear all the song rights, and we put it on in the valley, close to, I think it was Sherman Oaks,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken, or Encino, I forget where. And we ran it, and it was full houses every night. We had people coming out. We had Betty Garrett came out, who was Larry Parks' widow. We had the kids of Walter Donaldson, who wrote several Jolson songs, came out. We had Billy Lee, who was the original Sonny Boy, came out. And he was like 50 years old at the time. And we opened the second act with the actor singing Sonny Boy. And that particular night, he called, he broke, the third wall or the fourth wall, and he had Billy Lee come up and sit on his lap, and they sang Sonny Boy together.
Oh, that must have been great.
Yeah, but the play, up until about 2 or 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
had been my most successful play. It had been done all over the country. And then all of a sudden, political correctness. All of a sudden people are canceling productions because they're objecting to there's one scene where Jolson wears blackface, which was a part of the times.
That was, yeah, and that was a lot of his act.
Yeah, and, he wasn't a racist or anything like that. I mean, black performers, Burt Williams wore blackface, back in the day. But for some, the country has become so politically correct. So, getting a production of the play in the last 2 or 3 years has been next to impossible. People are afraid of it, afraid of it.
But it's a great opportunity for an actor to do a one-act play. And do you think, to some acting schools for monologues or actors who want to try it themselves?
All of these plays are available on through Amazon.
You guys have to see the amount.
And I find at the start of semesters that there is a big spike in sales of all the one-person plays. I've got Clara Bow.
Oh, that actually must be good.
Clara Bow is my, of all my one-person plays, it's the high, the biggest selling one.
I bet. She was something else. What does it deal with?
But you know, I think the reason is because there's no, you know, she was, you hear my dog barking in the background.
I love dogs. It's fine with me.
Yes. But Clara Bow, I think the reason she's the big seller is because really nobody has a frame of reference for her. As opposed to if you're doing Gable, you've got to do Gable. Or if you're doing Spencer Tracy, you've got to do, there has to be a frame of reference. And I think, you know, since she was, you know, basically a silent star, there is no frame of reference. I've got Orson Welles. I've got.
Oh yeah, that must be one for the hills. That must be a good one.
Yeah, I like that one very much. That's you know, he. But there's seven of them now, and Gable, Lombard, Tracy, Errol Flynn, Basil Rathbone, Orson Welles, and Clara Bow are all available on as audio downloads now because. You know, and got some fantastic actors doing the roles, and they all have music and sound effects.
Oh, cool.
You know, they're like radio dramas.
They're fascinating. And now I want to talk about another one you did, Lana and Johnny Were Lovers. So,
oh yeah.
What? So what?
I was in town when that happened too.
Were That's you really?
We were visiting L.A. And I remember the headlines when that, and we were staying like just a few blocks away from the house where the killing took place.
There was a lot of talk then that Cheryl took the blame for Lana.
That was I don't know if that's true or not. mine is a four character play.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not bring Cheryl on stage because she's still alive.
Right.
And so she's an offstage character. It's Lana, Johnny, Jerry Geisler, the lawyer, and Lana's mother are the four characters in the play.
And it's about basically her time with him and then the murder?
Yes.
I bet that's a good one, too. That would be a good one. Which is your favorite? Your one person, is it Al Jolson, or which one is your favorite?
That's a hard question. Depends on which one. You know, I'm very proud of the Ida Lupino play. The Jolson one has been my most popular, most successful. So, the Carol Lombard has had a lot of productions. I mean, I like them all. You know,
babies. Can you love one better than the other?
Yeah.
Right?
No, <Yeah. laughs>
you can't. You must love them equally. That's a law.
Absolutely. I also have one, Robinson and Raft, the three person play, George Raft and Edward G. Robinson. And I've got, Sexy Rexy with, Rex Harrison and four of the women in his life.
Who was the one that Carol Landis killed herself for?
For Rex Harrison.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And also Rachel Roberts killed herself. You know, I mean, he had two women who killed him. So those are two of the characters. Also Lily Palmer and Kay Kendall.
Wow.
The other characters.
And this is about the time when all this stuff is happening?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, you play it, you know, Rex Harrison was a son of a bitch. You know,
I heard that.
Really
liked, I heard
you know,
that nobody many
really
times.
Liked him.
Yeah.
You know, I also have the other one I have is Ava and Her Guys.
Ooh.
Which is Ava Gardner, Mickey Rooney, who was fun to write, Artie Shaw, and Frank Sinatra.
So I bet that's a goodie.
The other one is Nelson and Jeanette. Nelson, Eddie, and Jeanette McDonald.
Do you think, I've read this rumor that, I know she married Gene Raymond, and he was in some sting, and I don't know, he didn't get written about, but I read it was like sort of a, you know, a beard relationship, and that she truly loved Nelson Eddy. Do you think that's true?
That's what some people swear by it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've talked to people when I was working on it, I talked to people who swear by it, other people who don't. In fact, there's a Facebook site on on them, which I'm kind of banned for because I don't subscribe to the idea that they were actually lovers. And
you got banned?
No, seriously. Yeah, I mean, they get mad at me.
God forbid you could have a differing point of view.
Yes, yes. So that's a hard one to cast because you need two people with fantastic voices that look like
them. Yeah, kind. Well, you know what? When people play those parts and I see like remakes or something or characters that are supposed to be the actors or actresses, a lot of times they really don't look like them.
Well, the advantage of doing these as an audio thing is the character, like the guy who plays Gable for me is terrific, but he looks like Dean Jagger, you know, but he's terrific as Gable, you know, he's got the, you know, that's, mm-hmm. that's the advantage of doing these things is audio plays. They don't have to look like the person.
I've got to listen to some of those. Those would be a lot of fun for me. So you were a publicist for 35 years, I believe?
Something like that. I don't know, 68, 78, 88, 90. No, wait, 70, 80. Close to 30 years, I'd say.
And in your biography, it said that one of your ad campaigns of promotion for the Oscar is even in the Oscar book.
Yes.
So who was the promotion for?
Well, I used to represent a couple of songwriters by the name of Paul Francis Webster and Sammy Fain.
Uh-huh.
And they, wrote together. They, you know, Webster got three Oscars, Fain got two, but together they wrote Secret Love from
I love that movie.
Calamity Jane.
Yeah.
And Love with the Many Splendid Thing. And Webster wrote The Shadow of Your Smile.
How beautiful.
Sammy Fain's song before Webster was I'll Be Seeing You. So
I love that song. Oh, my God.
Two of the great, you know, and I was so proud. In fact, I'm sitting in my office. I'm looking at a picture of the three of us together, you know, taken many, many years ago. But Paul loved running for Oscar. And he called me one day and he said, I've got a song. And this was a song called A World That Never Was. And it's a lovely song. And it was in a picture that nobody would ever see. And it was butchered in the picture. But it was a great song. And Sam and Paul wanted to go for an Oscar nomination.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over to the house with Sammy, and Sammy had cut a demo of the song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a guy, an older person, looking back on his life and the world that never, you know, I remember all these things. Mm-hmm. They really, you know, that's the idea. And it's a beautiful song. So what I did, I said, let's let's press a bunch of records,
mm-hmm.
45s, and send the record, you know, to the entire music branch of the Academy, which mm-hmm. I think at that time was 300-400.
Wowza.
So we did, and we sent them out, and we put this ad in the paper, which I'm looking at now.
Variety?
In Variety and Hollywood Reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I did was I rented two phone answering machines, and I put them in my office, and we would advertise the phone number, call to hear Sammy Fain sing this song, his Oscar contender song, and for 3 weeks, so you'd call the number, and the tape would of Sammy singing the song would play, and for 3 weeks, my phone, it was driving me crazy.
Thank God
I had a closet, it didn't stop ringing for 3 weeks. And then we took this ad, which I'm looking at now. I hired a cartoonist, and it's a caricature of Sammy and Paul, and Sammy's at the piano and singing. And he says, oh, and he looks like he's dying from exhaustion. Oh, there goes that damn phone again. And and Paul's holding out the phone and says, sing it again, Sammy. And it was called Dial-A-Song. And we got nominated.
That is so cool.
We got nominated, and Eddie Albert sang the song on the Oscar show. Unfortunately, that was the year of Barbra Streisand's Evergreen.
Oh, nobody would have beaten that one.
Yeah, and but we got a lot of, you know, and they write about the, you know, the Oscar thing.
But that's amazing because it was a flop. Nobody really heard it, and you did a damn good job to get that to be nominated for an Oscar. You really put it out there.
And the next year I got a nominate. I think it was the next year. I got Maurice Jarre nominated for Best Score for Mohammed, Messenger of God.
Oh, I read about that there was a big brouhaha.
Oh, yeah. I was involved with that picture almost from the beginning because one of my dearest friends and clients was Michael Ansara.
I liked him. He used to be married to Barbara Eden, right?
He was married to Barbara, yes. Started shooting in Morocco, and they got kicked out of Morocco because they finished shooting in Libya. And the day the movie opened, there was a big a radical Muslim group took over. I think a couple office buildings or office building. It's so long ago.
In Washington, right?
In Washington, and this thing was going. And Michael and his future wife were traveling around the country doing a promotion for the film, and they called off. You know, they arrived in, I think it was Philadelphia, and they were met by the cops, and they were taken under guard to a hotel, and the next day they were flown back, and I met them with the press at the airport, LAX, and it was a big story, finally the group gave up and the picture opened and it went into the dumpster. It was a terrible, it was not a good movie. But
at least it got to be released, But he really didn't. Somebody said something about him to say that he's getting death threats, but then he actually did start getting death threats.
Who, Michael?
Yeah, for playing Muhammad.
No, nobody played Muhammad in that. It was the camera was Muhammad. And they said, this ugly piece of machinery is Muhammad, and so that's we're going back a lot of years, but. I mean, we're back in the 70s now, and, I'm going to be 77 in about a week, so my memory is not what it used to be.
You're doing good. Happy almost birthday.
Thank you.
So you were a publicist. I did buy your memoir. I did not have a chance to read it because I was sick and couldn't concentrate on anything. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really great read.
Well, thank you. And if you like it, read the sequel.
I will. I already laughed out loud.
Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Hollywood. Yeah.
I laughed out loud already, so I know I'm going to enjoy it. What makes you driven to do these plays?
Well, I started out because, I had yet to sell a screenplay. It took me 10 years of trying before I sold my first screenplay. And, it was a way to get out there and get people to start taking me seriously as a writer.
Well, I hope they do now because you...
I hope so, too.
You're pretty prolific, and you've done fictions as well.
I do the plays now is, to keep busy. You sit around and do nothing, and, I don't have anything to prove anymore.
I know.
But I enjoy doing them. I enjoy bringing these people to life who I'm starting to do people now that I actually knew. And I enjoy it. and you know, I get a production or two every year and around the country. And
that's great. Congrats.
We did my Carol Lombard play was done up in her hometown of Fort Wayne about 3 years ago.
What was that about? What was the gist of Carol Lombard?
Oh, well,
what period in her life?
Well, it takes place the night before she takes the plane.
That was the saddest thing. Her mother, her publicist.
Her mother and
her agent or whomever it was did not want to fly.
Well, the mother didn't want to fly. The mother said a psychic had told her to stay off planes in 1942.
And also, she was into numerology as well?
Yes. The numerologist told her that. And but that's one of my most popular plays. And it's you know, we had a production. Actually, we had a production in upstate New York about a year ago of a play.
I'd love to have seen it. How did she do? How did the actress do as Carol?
Well, I didn't see that one. They didn't fly me in for that one. But you know, everybody seems to enjoy it. You know, it's
she's beloved. What about Clark Gable's? What period did you do Clark Gable's one man show?
Oh, it takes place while you're shooting The Misfits.
Oh, the end of his life, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have to basically do it towards the end of their life because, you know, they need something to look back on. Like the Ida Lupino play takes place, you know, she still lived another 10, 15 years after the play ends. But, you know, you have to find them at a turning point or a crisis in their life because that's drama.
And then they reminisce. They go back in their mind
they go
about
back.
Things
what,
that happened.
What got me to this place? And I'm just trying to think. The Errol Flynn play takes place probably a month before his death.
He was very young when he died, wasn't he?
I think he was 50. Roughly 50, yeah.
Big drinker
big drinker,
scoundrel.
Yeah.
I read he had like mirrors, but you didn't know it, like the cops have when they're interrogating you.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's gross. You know, I liked Errol Flynn, but ew. And the Barbara Payton, ew.
Yeah, no. I enjoyed Flynn's movies. So. I have I have a Marie Chevalier.
I was just singing Think of It, Girls, yeah.
Yeah, a few years ago, we had a stage reading in New York.
Cool.
They flew me in, we're talking about maybe, 15, 16 years ago. They flew me, it was in 99. It was the year I went to Ireland. I went to Ireland shortly thereafter and directed a movie. But it was in 99. They did a stage reading at, what was the name of the theater? I don't remember.
Well, those are fun and pretty impressive that it got that far because you're trying to get the backers during the readings. You want somebody to say,
The problem with some of the songs is clearing the unlike Jolson.
Mm-hmm. Which,
And unlike my Nelson Eddy Jeanette McDonald play where the Jolson, there were problems clearing, and there still are, on a lot of the songs on Marie Chevalier, especially the ones from Gigi.
Yeah, his Thank Heaven for Little Girls, yeah.
Yeah, and on the Nelson Eddy one, I chose, and also the singing in my Ava Gardner play, I made a point to choose songs that are in public domain.
Good idea.
And half of the Jolson songs are in public domain.
That's
too,
funny. So. Did he have no... Offspring or anybody like that that would be, getting money off of this?
They don't. Are you talking about the? No, they wouldn't get money off it because they're public figures. But you pay rights to the songwriter to use the songs if they're not in the public domain. I mean, there's a lot of people, musical people, I'd love to do, but frankly, clearing the rights to these songs are you have to go to a bunch of different places, and it's frankly a pain in the butt.
I bet.
You know?
And there's so many movies in the public domain. You can find them all on YouTube. There's so, I mean, like...
Anything earlier than 1922 or that was not renewed for copyright.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's tons of them. So when you went to Hollywood, did you want to be an actor?
Well, I think initially you always want to be an actor. But when I finally went, I think I wanted to be a director. You know, I decided I wanted to be in the entertainment business when I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
When my mother took me to see Pinocchio and he's going, "Hi, diddly dee, an actor's life for me." That's all I ever wanted. And growing up in Seattle, you know, my father was, you know, is a businessman and all my family. And you know, everybody, you know, thought it was a big joke, you know, because I wanted to be an actor.
I know. Why did they think that? You know, I know first when he told my mom, she laughed. I said, "How dare you? Really? How dare you?"
Well, it's not an easy life. It's harder now. You know, if I went to Hollywood, you know, I found a way to get in. You know, I found a way to get in.
You fought your way in. I read that you were just, you didn't give up.
Well, you know, I found a door.
Right.
I snuck in through a side door, but that side door doesn't exist anymore. Because back when I went there, Daily Variety, and I became a publicist, and Daily Variety and Hollywood Reporter were daily. They both came out every day. They were like your newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And I was very good at planting stories in both papers, among other things. And, you know, that got me clients, publicity clients. Today, Variety and Hollywood Reporter, they're on the internet and they're weeklies. And I talk to publicist friends of mine and they say it's like pulling teeth getting into those.
I bet.
And those are the things that actors and people in the business want to be in it because those are the trade papers. And I'm sure if I was young enough and I went there and I hung around for a year or so, I would find a way in because that's the kind of person I am.
Yeah.
But the way I did it before does not exist. I you know, right now I don't know how I would find a way in. But
what do you think of all this Harvey Weinstein, Me Too kind of stuff for the actors and directors and people?
Well, I think what's going to happen, and I don't approve of what all you know, all these things, I don't approve, but what's happening right now is... What's the word? It's a they're trying to get anybody who's done anything bad. You know, they're blackballing them in the business. And what's going to happen is the capable people, the talented people, who are not perfect. Who is perfect? But you know, these talent people like Kevin Spacey was one of the best actors in the business, and he's through. He's through in the business.
Yeah, they threw him off the movie too, and Christopher Plummer took his place.
Yeah, and so fine that they're going to get rid of all these people who have maybe done something wrong, and what's going to be left?
Women. And they're going to have to do women, you know, plays, or women are going to have to play men.
Few movies. I used to see couple movies a week. I love film. And I don't think I've seen this year or last year, of last year's movie, I don't think I've seen 5 movies that came out last year. Now, there's a few films that I don't go to the movies anymore.
Annoying. Everybody said they're texting or...
Yeah, the last movie I saw in the theater was Zero Dark Thirty, which was, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago? And I wait till they come... If there's something I want to see, I wait till they come out on DVD, and I rent them at Redbox.
Yeah, and I do that too, because I don't go to movies, especially in New York. Even if you go to the earlier movie, people are texting, then they're chomping their popcorn for an hour, and I'm like, I gotta get out of here. So
I look at what's coming out, and there's nothing, you know, there's a few things I want to see that are up for Oscar, but most of the stuff that comes out, I have no interest in.
Me either. Whatsoever. Or the superhero crap. It's like, pluck. Oh. Please.
You know, I was watching, and we get Stars and we get Showtime. And occasionally we get a free HBO, you know, once, two, three times a year. They get it for a week. And I watch, look at some of these movies like Batman versus Superman. I turned the thing off in 20 minutes into the picture, you know.
I would have turned it off in five. I don't think I would have even started to watch it. I really hate those kind of movies. They get on my nerves.
Well, I think part of the problem is my age. Because, you know, like I said, I'm going to be 77 next week. And there's very little out there that surprises me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's... this, you know, last night my wife and I, we watched The Old Lady Killers with Alec Guinness.
Yes.
Tremendous.
I loved him. And he was, I just watched, yesterday I watched Great Expectations with him in it as well.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't care for the movies they're making anymore. And
I don't either. That's why I'm a TCM gal.
TV shows I enjoy. You know, I like the Dick Wolf shows. You know, like, what is it? Chicago PD and Chicago Fire and Law and Order. You know, I like those shows. We watch those shows. But
yeah.
There's very few things. You know, when the older you get, you've seen it all. And every now and then something comes along that surprises you.
Yeah. You know what movie?
Maybe once every two or three years.
Yeah. You know what movie I'm interested in seeing, though, is the one about Gloria Graham, The Last Years of Her Life.
Oh, I want to see that, too.
Yes. That one I'm very in. I love Annette Bening, and I find Gloria Graham totally fascinating. And her whole story, look, you know, she, how old was her stepson when she was banging him while she was married to the guy?
I know.
Jeez.
Well, you know, she won an Oscar for The Bad and the Beautiful. And which is a great picture.
I love that movie, yeah.
But that's not an Oscar. I forget who she was up with, but there is nothing spectacular about that role that makes it Oscar worthy.
Well, how many people win and it doesn't make them Oscar worthy? Yeah.
A lot of
rotten shows or whatever, Emmy, Oscars. It's like, huh? What are you putting this thing up there? Why?
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
And I'm not that old, you know. I just don't like, I like, people used to tease me, you like movies with, and they have to be dead people. I have to watch movies. But I love TCM. I had Eddie Muller on, and he was such a doll. And I love all of these things. I love these movies. They make me feel, they have a story, they're not disgusting, they're not superheroes.
And you can hear what they're saying.
Yes.
You know, there are so many, yeah, often today I listen, you know, to I watch a show on TV or I listen, and I can't understand what they're saying because they mumble or whatever. And you put on one of these older movies where they you can hear every word of dialogue. So it's not my hearing; it's the way their lines are being delivered.
Well, I hear a lot of actors in these movies or TV shows, and they talk really low like this and talk about, I'm like, speak up. I hear them, but it just annoys me, this low voice.
Oh, I know.
Blah, 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 blah. Okay. I don't get it. So you left Hollywood when?
We moved. I live in Austin, Texas, and we moved in 2009.
That's supposed to be a nice place, Austin.
It's nice. Yes, you know, it's for a while I missed the Hollywood scene, you know.
I bet.
But realistically it doesn't exist anymore. What I loved about it doesn't exist anymore.
It's so different, and I don't know. Like you said, you know, I'm not old. You're not old either, 77. You're spring chicken. But I'm not old because I've always loved classic movies. My dad, you know, had me watching them when I was a kid. And they're just good. Not all of them are good. I'm not saying every one of them is good. Of course they're not. But they're not like so, you know, like the what are they, the like the horror movies, which are torture porn, where you cut off people's limbs and blood, and there's torture. I mean, ew, I hate those movies. They're horrible, but they make money, and they have a thing. Speaking of movies, now, you did Dillinger and what, with Martin Sheen?
Dillinger and Capone. Let's say I wrote the original script, but that's not what they filmed, and I was not happy with the way the picture turned out.
Oh, that's a shame. Did you ever
meet? The one I'm very proud of, which I wrote, is called Cheyenne Warrior with Kelly Preston. And it's obviously a Western, and it came out about 25 years ago. I forget the exact year. And I still get fan mail on that picture.
Cool. You know, that's one thing about people. You know, you get new people who find you out and discover you. They think that you're their discovery. But it's timeless if you do something people like. And I think that's right. Was it a TV movie or was it in the theater?
It played, you know, it's a Roger Corman film, and he played it in one or two theaters, and then he released it direct to home video. Mm-hmm. It played on Showtime. And for me, I just discovered, I remember this was back in the day, you know, when you had video stores, and I was standing in our local video store once, and the guy had it, and some woman, you know, I was standing next to me, and I said, you know, she didn't know who I was, and I said, you know, watch it, it's a good movie. She said, oh, I saw it on TV, I loved it. You know, so
I've got to find it. Might be on YouTube. I'm going to look because I'd like to see it.
I hope not, because if it's on YouTube, it's stolen.
Well, you know, a lot of people have accounts and they upload stuff, and then people find out about it, and then they, you know, take it away, and then they make the people.
Well, you know, if you've seen Cheyenne Warrior, and you liked it. Roger Corman hired me to write a sequel to it about 10 years later. It's called, and he never made it. In fact, there are two versions of the script. Anyway, I retained the publishing rights. Mm-hmm. So, if you like the original, it's called, the book is called Cheyenne Warrior 2 Hawk. Because one of the scripts is called Cheyenne Warrior 2, the other is called Hawk, and you can order it from Amazon, and it's actually one of my better selling books because it you know people who see the movie want to know what happens.
And that's a shame it didn't get picked. What a picked up. What about?
Well, it's. You know, shooting a Western, this is a more expensive Western than the original.
Yeah.
You know, because it begins with the Sand Creek Massacre, which is a big scene. So, you know, Roger just didn't want to, you know, spend the money. But it's, like I say, if you want to see what happens to characters, the book is available, the screenplays are available.
Check him out on Amazon. He has so much stuff. 46
Look me
things up
on Amazon and buy everything.
Yes, follow him. I follow him there. And so now I know whenever anything new comes, I'll find out about it. But just, you really do have a number of stuff, and you should be so proud of yourself because you've done so much. And you said, I'm going to make it. I'm going to get out there. And you did. You did. You actually did, and I think that's fabulous.
Well, thank you.
You didn't give up. You kept on going.
Well, that's what it takes. You
it
know?
Does.
I run into so many people who, they expect to, you know, in a year. You know, like I said, it took me 10 years of trying to sell my first screenplay.
What about all this reality TV and stuff? That's just like, ew. And it's so big. And it's, I guess, because it's cheap to produce, but people watch it.
Right.
And it's...
They do. And, you know, well, you know, you save money. You don't really need writers of any...
No, they make it up. They make up the storylines.
You know, they probably give them a basic script, you know, basic outline. And
there you go.
There you go.
But I saw Kim Kardashian at a restaurant by my house that I like to go to, and they had the half of the, I think it was a Sunday. I didn't know she was there, but the bartender, I love Kim. Yeah, so they were taping with the husband she married, but she divorced, she didn't want to marry, and they were taping them sitting at the table discussing their marriage and their life, and out she leaves. So it's all contrived. It's not real. It's so not reality TV.
I know.
So, Michael, tell us, are you working on a book or a screenplay or anything now?
I'm just about to start another one-person play.
Cool.
On a Hollywood star who I knew.
Very cool.
And then I hope to do another one on a Hollywood star I knew after that.
I can't wait to read them. I can't wait to read them. So, why don't you give people information they can get you? Obviously, you can get him on Amazon.com, all of his 46 stuff. That's so impressive.
I have a website. It's not really up to date, but you can contact me through it. Druxmanworks, Druxman Works, Works. That's all one word, .com. And, there's way, you can contact me through that.
And you can also see him posting in the classic movie stuff, and he's there. He's on Facebook. And I just think you're a really cool dude. What can I tell you?
Well, thank you.
And you are. And you're really great for coming on. And once I read your book and I, get all the scoops there, I'd like you to come on again and talk about that.
I'd be happy to.
Great. I'm thrilled. And I will read it. Like I said, I was just like Miss Headache.
Well, there'll be a test.
You better give it to me. I'm pretty good. I can retain. I read fast, but I retain the info, which is really good. Yes. So you can give me a test. I'd like you to.
Okay.
That's a deal. Okay, Michael. So I hope you have a wonderful day. And thank you so much for calling right on time, pronto. And for being on the show. And I'll be posting this probably in 2 days.
Okay.
So I'll let you know.
Thank you very much.
You are so welcome, Michael, and thank you for coming on. And I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Michael Druxman, and he is a doll, and he was very kind to come on the show. And next time he comes in, I want to talk about the people he knew in Hollywood, and also, more scoopy stuff. But, he is a prolific writer, so check him out. And I am going to check him out on some of these plays I haven't gotten. But first, I have to read his memoir. So everybody, thank you so much. And Jessica should be up soon. I'm waiting for my editor to send me this stuff. And you'll have double whammy. And we're going to be doing some really fun shows. I have some really fun gossipy shows coming up. So please stay tuned. And thanks, everybody. True Tales. It's not True Tales. I wanted it to be True Tales of Tinseltown. It's True Stories of Tinseltown. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so, so much for listening. Bye.